Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly magazine of most things culturally considered. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week, young artists from the Marilla Opera Program, baritone Thomas Gunther and soprano Adelaide Bodecker, will be discussing their roles in the upcoming production of Andre Previn's A Streetcar Named Desire. Conductor David Marash and singer Caitlin Cobb-Violet talk about the Youth Musical Theater Company's production of South Pacific. Stephen Stubbins, co-executive director for Transcendence Theater Company, shares details about the third season of Broadway Under the Stars at Jack London State Historic Park. And Peter Robinson offers some summer reading suggestions. Stay with us. Here in the Bay Area means some great operatic performances, not only at San Francisco Opera, a couple of performances of La Traviata remain, but by the up-and-coming Marilini, those young singers enrolled in the Marilla Opera Program, which is closely associated with San Francisco Opera, and dedicated to the continuing education and training of the finest young operatic talent. Founded in 1957 and named for San Francisco Opera's founder, Gaetano Merola, the program is recognized as one of the most prestigious operatic training programs in the world. The program typically receives more than 800 applications for about 30 positions each year. Throughout the summer, Merola artists participate in master classes and private coachings with opera luminaries and also receive training in operatic repertory, foreign languages, diction, acting, and stage movement. Quite a summer ahead for these people. And this summer, full productions of Mozart's Don Giovanni and Andre Previn's Streetcar Named Desire are in store for you in the month ahead, as well as a free concert performance at Yerba Buena Gardens on the 19th of July and a big gala celebration on the 16th of August. KALW is a media sponsor, by the way, of the Marilla Opera Program. Two of the performers involved with the Andre Previn opera Streetcar Named Desire join me today in studio. Native Iowan Thomas Gunther received his music training at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, as well as at Simpson College and the University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music, and at La Musica Lirica in Italy. He was also in the young artist programs of Des Moines Metro Opera, Indianapolis Opera, Kentucky Opera, Opera Theater of St. Louis, before becoming a 2014 Marilini. He will be singing the baritone role of Stanley Kowalski. Thomas, welcome to KLW.
Hello.
The role of Stella Kowalski falls to soprano Adelaide Bodecker, originally from Sarasota, Florida. She attended the University of Florida, the Eastman School of Music in Rochester, New York, and was in the Marcello Giordani Young Artist Program as part of the Crested Butte Music Festival in Colorado. Welcome to you, Adelaide.
Oh, thank you. Hi.
Well, Andre Previn's A Streetcar Named Desire, with a libretto by Philip Littell, is based on the Tennessee Williams classic, of course. Mm-hmm. And it's had its premiere at San Francisco Opera in 1998. Now, it's hard to believe that some people aren't familiar with this classic work, but for those who aren't familiar with the story, Thomas, maybe you can offer us a brief synopsis.
Sure. So, A Streetcar Named Desire is about a woman named Blanche DuBois. After losing her home and job, she is a Southern belle and arrives in New Orleans, or New Orleans, as they like to say down south. Huh. And she comes in to this area where her sister and her sister's husband are living, and she takes her streetcar named Desire to meet up with them and can't believe that she's living in such conditions, in such a poor neighborhood, considering her upbringing. Stella and Stella's brutish husband, played by me, I guess, is Stanley Kowalski. And as they live there together, a lot of sexual tension develops between Blanche and Stanley. And the reason for her being there becomes enlightened. Everyone becomes enlightened about the situation. And, and some pretty nasty things happen.
And you get to play the villain for
the
most part, right?
Sorry, that was
I guess for baritones, it's always best to play the rather darker roles, isn't it?
It's a lot of fun. It's a chance to like stretch your acting chops.
Yeah. Adelaide, how are you finding the preparation for a contemporary role like Stella Kowalski different from some of the more classical repertory roles?
It was a long journey. When I got a phone call from Mark Morash. So I got that call, and that was back in December. I can't believe that. That feels like it was yesterday. And he said, hey, we want you to do this. And I immediately bought the score because I knew, number one, it was going to be very hard to learn, but number two, that it was going to be just a blast. And so I started working probably midway through December, really starting just picking out notes and everything and working on it, because it's unlike a classical, you know, Mozart opera or, I don't know, Rossini opera. It's not tonally based, so it's very, I don't know, wouldn't you say abstract?
It's abstract in a lot of ways, and it's
jazz.
It's polytonal.
Totally, and there's lots of jazz influences, which I had never done any jazz in my life beforehand. Love listening to it, but I'd never sung it. And so I just started working and got together with a coach accompanist and worked my little behind off, and you know, it was a long journey, but it was a successful one. And I don't know, it's really fun getting to do an American play turned into an opera, because there's so many layers that you can pull back, and you can just really have a great subtext in all of it, and the story is so rich. So it really is a theater piece and an opera at the same time, which is just amazing and totally different than things I've worked on before.
Interesting.
So, yeah, it's really
so
cool.
So at least, even though the music itself might be difficult to get in your brain, you don't have to worry about the language problem.
Exactly, totally. Yeah. Well, and it gets ingrained in your brain, and then you love it. You just live for it. And I don't know. It's just, it's in your body. It's this muscle memory that you just have, and you hear it and you know that it's right. So it's pretty cool.
How about you, Thomas? How are you finding learning this role compared to, say, the Count and Figaro?
Well, funny you should say that. I started learning this score the same time I was doing Don Giovanni. So I was doing Don Giovanni in February, and I was learning this score on top of it. So it was kind of a...
Are heels your major role?
it tends to be recently. I don't know if it's typecasting or what. But learning this was quite different than anything else I've learned before. One of the most difficult scores I've ever worked on is this one, because of the polytonality of it. I've done another show, Le Mamelle di Tiresias, and is by Poulenc, and that was also really, really difficult music, but difficult in its own way. But this one is specifically difficult because of how you'll be hearing music in one key and you sing in another key that's related, but only by a single tone or a type of influence through jazz, and I say stacked chords or polytonal chords, which is a fancy way of saying difficult.
Yeah. So it's
Good job, Tom.
I guess.
Would you say it's almost a matter of rote learning at some point?
Totally.
Where you just have to go measure by measure and get it into your brain and muscle memory.
Absolutely. Yep. There's even moments in the show where you sing in one key and then the next phrase you sing is in another key. And it messes with your mind a lot. So it's
if you don't introduce the right key, then you throw everything off.
Yeah.
So,
but
it's a lot of pressure, but good pressure.
Once you get the relationship, established with the music, well, not just the character relationship, but
totally,
the musical relationship, then you can memorize it.
Yep. Well, you two are getting along like brother and sister already. Just in the
you should see us in rehearsals. It's great.
That's awkward. That's really awkward.
Brother and sister, husband, wife. No, sorry, shouldn't have gone there.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the overall Marilla experience for you guys. What's it been like?
Phenomenal. Absolutely the most amazing experience I have ever had in my life. I mean, hands down.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I mean, the faculty and the teachers that have come in and worked with us have been...
World class.
Completely world class. And... just every day you have light bulb moments where it's just like, oh, that's how it's supposed to be. Mm. And it's, you know, it's a lot of times you think, oh, you know, I'll work little by little and I'm not going to have those big moments every day. But honest to God, those happen every single day. It is amazing. And it's just the things that we're finding out about acting and moving on stage. Like our first week here, we had this guy named Chuck Hudson here who was working with us, and we like learned how to, you know, act for a large audience. So even though they can't see our facial expressions because, you know, they're in like the second balcony, they can see our bodies do something that does the exact same thing. And they think, oh, that person's sad. They're happy. They're in love. It's amazing. Just things like that you'd never think about.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So in addition to these roles as Stella and Stanley, respectively, what other roles are you singing in public this summer?
This summer, with Marilla?
Yeah.
Do you want to go first?
Well, I'll be in the grand finale concert on the 16th. Mm-hmm. I'll be singing Le Directeur from Mamelle de Tiresias. It's a totally different role, I guess, but it's something I'd never done before, and I guess they said I'm up for the challenge because I could learn this thing. And then I'll be chorus for Giovanni as well. They put most of us in the chorus for Giovanni as well because it's good use of our time to be working with, you know, Martin Katz, Maestro Katz. Sorry. Mm-hmm.
And I'm in the chorus for Giovanni as well. And then I'm singing Gilda in the Rigoletto Quartet. I'm so excited about that. And then Nanetta in the finale from Falstaff.
So. Oh, hey, Falstaff, I'll be singing Ford. So right, that'll be fun.
Fantastic.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Just in a month and a half, quite a bit going on.
I know.
So looking beyond the whole Marilla experience, what's happening for you, Adelaide?
I'm heading to Pittsburgh Opera, and so I'll be artist in residence with them for next year. So I'm singing Frasquita in Carmen with them, and singing, covering and doing the artist-in-residence performance of Marie and Daughter of the Regiment, and, you know, singing the Mozart Requiem and, I don't know, fun stuff. So that's my next step. But then, I don't know. Who knows after that?
No one does,
I know,
really.
I know.
Thomas, how
are you? Well, I'll be heading back to school. I'm in my third year of my doctorate work at the University of Kentucky, and should be my final year of coursework in and I have to do the dissertation and all the recital requirements on top of that. So,
yeah, I got as far as the recital requirement. I didn't go quite far with the dissertation thing. So good luck with
you
that.
You know, all those paper, that big old paper, it's daunting. It's one of those big hurdles they have to take care of. But
yeah.
I'll be singing with them. I'll be singing,
Who are you trying to think of?
Oh, the show I'm doing this fall.
I don't know. But,
Sweeney Todd.
Ah!
I was singing Sweeney Todd.
There you go. All right.
Another bad guy.
Wow.
Fun.
Yeah.
And then,
he's not bad.
Well, no bad guy thinks they're bad.
He's not bad.
Yeah,
I love
okay.
Sweeney.
Well, and then also I'll be singing two of the bad guys in Tales of Hoffman in the Spring. So, I mean.
Careful,
the life
Thomas.
Of a bear.
I don't know. I don't
how
know.
How old are you now?
I'm 31. I'm getting there. It's time for my evil training, I guess.
Time to lighten up. Huh?
Yeah, please.
Well, I wish you both well on this production as well as whatever is coming else in your life. And I'm sure we'll see you back here on the stages of San Francisco as well as.
Yeah,
I hope
wonderful.
So. Oh, my gosh, that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. That's Thomas Gunther,
thank
who's
you.
Singing Stanley Kowalski, and Adelaide Bodecker, who's singing Stella Kowalski in the production of Streetcar Named Desire. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
This production of A Streetcar Named Desire premieres in San Francisco is one of three co-productions performed across the country with subsequent runs at Opera Santa Barbara and Kentucky Opera, with Jose Maria Condemi directing all three. This Argentinian was a first-time Adler Fellow in stage direction at the San Francisco Opera and a Fulbright Fellow as well. He's currently Artistic Director of Opera Santa Barbara, where he oversees artistic planning. It's being conducted by Mark Marash, who currently serves as the Director of Musical Studies for San Francisco Opera Center and received wonderful reviews for his conducting of the Marilla 2013 production of Britten's The Rape of Lucretia. For more information about everything Marilla, go to Marilla, MEROLA.org. Thomas, if I could just impose on you one more time to introduce an aria from Streetcar Named Desire that we're about to hear.
All right, this is... Right This is Renee Fleming singing I Want Magic from Act 3. This is right after Mitch, who is the love interest of Blanche DuBois, finds out that she hasn't been telling the truth about her entire story. So here it is.
Renee Fleming singing from the third act of the André Previn, Philip Littell opera based on Tennessee Williams, A Streetcar Named Desire. You'll hear Adelaide Bodecker in that role with fellow Marolini on July 10th and 12th. Information at marola.org. Good afternoon once again. I'm David LaTulipe, and you're listening to Open Air on KALW. Still to come, Peter Robinson on some summer reading ideas, Broadway Under the Stars at Jack London State Park, and next, more talented younger artists, this time of the Broadway variety. Musical Theater Company closes its ninth season with the Rodgers and Hammerstein classic South Pacific, July 18th to 27th, with performances at the El Cerrito High School Performing Arts Theater. It's directed by YMTC Artistic Director Jennifer Bozing, who also helmed their productions of Sunday in the Park with George, Urinetown, and Sweeney Todd, with musical direction by David Moschler, whose recent work includes work with San Jose Reps, One Night with Janis Joplin, West Edge Opera, Awesome Orchestra, and ACT, among other groups. David joins me in studio to talk about this production, and he's joined by the actress that will be playing the character Nellie in the show, Caitlin Cobb-Violet. Caitlin is a recent grad of Oakland Technical High School and is heading to NYU for their acting program this fall, and is a veteran of some 9 YMTC shows. Caitlin, Dave, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you for having us, David.
Of course. Now, I like to think that everyone knows the story of South Pacific, Dave, but maybe you can share with us, for everyone that doesn't have the same drama queen knowledge of all things Broadway that I do, maybe give us a little synopsis of the show to start things off.
Sure. So it's based on James Michener's Tales of the South Pacific, and takes place during sort of near the end of World War II, and what happens is there's a company of U.S. soldiers, mostly sailors, some Marines, that are stationed on an island, and a young ensign, a nurse named Nellie Forbush, which Caitlin is playing, meets an older French planter. They fall madly in love right away, but she discovers that he has mixed-race children from a previous Polynesian wife, and in the midst of this war, the show was about her sort of racism and whether the question it poses is whether or not racism is taught or born in us, and which is very, very, very revolutionary for a Broadway musical in 1949.
It's groundbreaking to even approach the subject back then.
Absolutely. The main song that dealt with it, You Have to Be Carefully Taught, was actually cut out by the producers in the original production and only added in subsequent productions because it was considered too risque. Hmm. Nowadays, some of their shows, people complain that Rodgers and Hammerstein's style feels either a little dated or somewhat disconnected. But as people saw with this production, with the Broadway production in 2008, the work is very well crafted and speaks for itself and can be just as thrilling and moving as it was in 1949.
Mm. So how did things... I mean, it's set in World War II, obviously not the happiest subject matter of a musical, but it is a Broadway musical after all, and a lot of fun is had in the course of the show as well. Caitlin, how did you first discover South Pacific as a young performer?
I guess I originally thought it was going to be like a super upbeat, like fun show, but it has a lot of depth, like Dave was talking about, and I think it kind of... it's really interesting because there's a lot of waiting around. There's this feeling of restlessness among, like, the Marines and the nurses who are there because they're in this period where their war is on the edge, it's on the brink, but it's not quite there yet. So there's just, like, this, like, building tension, and that comes out in many different ways. It comes out in Nothing Like a Dame, which is this fun, like, rousing song that the Marines do, and but it also... you know, there's this tension, and I think what I've really enjoyed about it is that it has both, and Nellie isn't, she isn't one feeling. She's, like, she is so much love and so much hate, and that's why I just think the show is still, you know, current, and people will still enjoy it, because it has that three-dimensionality.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're not changing the setting. You know, sometimes musicals can change their setting, but this is very definitely set in the South Pacific during World War II. Dave, I'm wondering if you can tell me what we're going to be hearing from the music director's perspective.
So this is one of the great pieces of repertoire of 20th century musical theater. And we're doing a fairly classic treatment, you know, with a full chorus of actors, and we're going to be playing Robert Russell Bennett's original 30-piece orchestrations.
Fantastic.
Which YMTC has always has been committed to, and something not done often.
And again, with the younger players, or you have some other...
Actually, we have a mix. We have a mix of local professionals, and they play alongside students, advanced high school students and others back from college. And the El Cerrito Performing Arts Center has a very nice full-size pit, so this is one theater that we could perform in that allows us that. And it's Robert Russell Bennett was like the grandfather of Broadway orchestrations, and this is one of the few shows that he wrote the entire set of charts for. Normally, orchestrators on Broadway, because it's so fast-paced, they get a song and it goes into rehearsals a week later or sometimes a day later. They have to work very quickly, and they usually have a team of what's called ghosters, similarly in Hollywood and things like that. And this is one show that they wanted to be such a big hit that Rodgers and Hammerstein made sure that Robert Russell Bennett did every chart except for one. So it's a really, really lush, classic, big orchestration with a more or less full string section. 9 brass, 5 woodwinds, harp, percussion. It's it complements the all the excellent acting on stage very well.
Very nice. Now, I assume there's a certain energy that comes with working with such a young cast. I mean, whether it's unbridled enthusiasm or raging hormones, one of the two. But it must be very different for you to work with this degree of enthusiasm.
It is. It's it's a wonderful blessing because these young people, they bring such honesty to the roles. They have, they don't carry around the same kind of baggage that we as adults accumulate over the years. And they bring in this vitality and honesty and openness. And yes, they may not have taken years and years and years of dance or singing lessons or acting lessons yet, but it more than makes up for the energy that they bring more than makes up for maybe the lack in experience. And it what we say at YMTC is that our productions aren't good in spite of them being young. It's good because they're young. And so we always choose challenging material, and we don't do the junior version of the show or cut out the difficult parts dramatically or musically. And time and time again, the cast always exceeds our expectations.
Now, Caitlin, you're playing Nellie in this show, and you're a veteran of 9 shows. You're just graduating high school, and you've been in 9 musical theater productions already. How did you first, was it YMTC that brought you into the musical theater world first, or when did you first hear your first recording?
Well, I used to do San Francisco Girls Choir, so I had some singing experience, in choir, you sort of just stand with your arms on both sides, and I was like, I kind of want to move around, like, I want to feel it more. And so I saw a chorus line at YMTC because my friend Lena Mayer was in it, and I saw it, and I was just blown away, and I was like, I just want to be up there so bad. And I did a Pocket Broadway workshop first, and that was like, not a production. It was just like I was learning. And the great thing about YMTC is that we put on these amazing, spectacular shows, but the entire thing is a learning process. So it's like, you go in, you do a show, but then you're talking with, Jennifer, the director, about like, how do I do this? And she'll teach a mini voice lesson or a mini acting lesson. So it's a learning process. And I just love getting to be a part of like something that's really big, but really safe. And I don't think I could have gone through high school without doing YMTC.
And heading to NYU in the fall for the acting program. Is that what you're going to emphasize in musical theater?
I'm getting a BFA in acting. Uh-huh. At the studio Playwrights Horizons, which does acting, and you also are learning directing and playwriting, etc. And I'm so excited. And I also, just working with such professional company now, I just know that that's what I want to do with the rest of my life if I can.
Very nice. Have you been to New York, I take it?
Yeah. I went there last summer to do the Tisch Summer High School program to do acting. And it was amazing.
Nice. It's Caitlin Cobb-Violet. She is Nellie in the South Pacific production of the Youth Musical Theater Company. Dave Moschler is the music director. So, Caitlin, who is the Emile to your Nellie in your cast?
The Emile is played by Ethan Ostro. He goes to Berklee High School. He's younger than me, but he looks a lot older than I am. And he's a very like mature, professional actor, so I'm... And my friend, I've known him since he was in the 8th grade and I was a sophomore. And Merrily We Roll Along, which was also at YMTC. And I feel so lucky to be working with him. And it's really nice because it's nice getting to work with people that you know so well. But everybody cares so much. So it's just like, I don't have to feel weird for being like the drama geek.
Well, I wish you both a great run, Dave. Have fun working with the combination of youth and ringers for your orchestra. It sounds like it's going to be a very enthusiastic production.
Thank you so much, David.
Caitlin, best of luck to you this fall as well.
Thank you.
Well, we'll hear Paolo Zott from the new Broadway cast recording singing the classic from South Pacific, Some Enchanted Evening. All information about the Youth Musical Theater Company at ymtcberklee.org.
You may see a stranger across a crowded room, and somehow you know even then that somewhere you see her again and again. Some enchanted evening.
Paolo Zott, singing that classic from the new Broadway cast recording of Rodgers and Hammerstein's South Pacific. Such a great score. Boy, well, what the heck? Let's hear the full overture as well. Here is the overture to South Pacific.
Thank you.
Robert Russell Bennett orchestration of the overture to Rodgers and Hammerstein's South Pacific. You can catch the Youth Musical Theater Company's production of that through July 27th. Go to ymtcberkeley.org for more information. Good afternoon. I'm David LaTulipe. Still to come, Peter Robinson will be offering us some summer reading material ideas. If you'd rather head north for your Broadway experience, and who doesn't need a visit to Sonoma Wine Country, consider a stop at Jack London State Park for the Transcendence Theater Company's productions Under the Stars, now in its third season, featuring musical theater artists with Broadway, film, and television credits under their belt. Playing through September 6th, some four differently themed concerts are complemented by wine tasting and picnic fare for sale from various on-site vendors to enhance your experience. The next concerts are on July 25th and 6th, so plenty of time to block out that time on your calendar. Here to talk about this season's remaining three offerings is Stephen Stubbins, who, along with Brad Swarovski, is co-executive director for Transcendence Theater Company. Stephen, welcome to KLW.
It's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Sure. Well, let's get right down to it. Your season kickoff is just behind you, the final performance of the review, One Singular Sensation, having concluded this past Saturday. Tell us about that. How was that experience?
It was sensational. For people who haven't been to Jack London State Park yet, the venue that we're in is remarkable. It's, first of all, where Jack London lived, where he died, and where he wrote a lot of his most famous books. But there's a great lawn of the park where we actually do all the pre-show picnicking and wine, and the whole community comes out. We get about 860 people at each show. And then you walk into these open-air winery ruins that are open to the sky, and you see the sun go down and the lights come up and these Broadway performers come out and take it to the next level.
It sounds like an absolutely magical setting.
It is. And the show that we just did is so cool because we always like throwing in surprises. On top, of course, of nature itself, where we had the moon right behind the stage a couple nights. We actually had a shooting star during one of the big numbers that the audience just gasped this last week.
Oh, my gosh.
But we also, in our second number, we had three horses. We did, I don't know if you know Guys and Dolls.
Sure.
We did Fugue for Tin Horns. And up on the hill above the winery walls comes three horses with three guys on them.
That's great.
Things like that just kind of like they just add such a cool flavor to everything we do.
And the crowds must have been going wild for that too.
Yeah, it was great. We had great crowds both weekends, and we had 20 different performers in that show. Oftentimes, you know, when you go see a musical, you might see, you know, one or two like lead performers in that musical, and then the rest is kind of ensemble and support. The cool thing about what we get to do is we get to bring in basically 20 leads to do, you know, featured songs from top shows, and it all weaves together with a really cool theme.
Mm. So, well, I mentioned that there are three remaining different concerts that are still to come as part of the Broadway Under the Stars series. Let's talk about what's coming up next.
That's great. Well, what's really fun is our next one is our Fantastical Family Night, and it's geared towards the whole family, towards kids. This is our third season of doing this type of concert. It's always different because it's a different group of performers, different songs, but it's definitely more interactive than just a regular concert. And there's going to be a lot of songs from Disney. We have some, I have to spoil this, but we do have some Frozen that's going to be done because everybody in the world is like singing Frozen right now.
I still have yet to see the, I've got to rent it or something.
Yeah, you do. Like if you have any kids in your life, they're going to sing it to you. But it's actually cool because it also ties in. We do a Broadway kids camp where the kids who are part of that camp the week that we do it also get to do a number in the show. And they have this really awesome opportunity to work that week with these performers who have, you know, these Broadway careers. So it's a really cool thing.
Nice. Now, you've got some serious talent involved in this series. Now, tell us a little bit about the audition process or how are people coming to you?
Well, it's kind of remarkable. I mean, myself and Amy Miller, who we, along with Brad Swarovski, kind of founded the company, both Amy and I have been on Broadway ourselves and had careers. And one of the really cool things of us being artists starting the company is that we have all these connections from the shows that we've done in the past. And it's working with those people that you've always loved, that you met, you know, on your path. And we have, I mean, this year we're bringing out 54 different performers, and it's all through referral, and it's all through our company culture. We actually, we screen all the performers based on our mission of Transcendence, our company, first before we see anybody perform. So you get these people who are all where the ego's out of the process and they're all aligned on a common mission, and that's what the audiences feel. Hmm. They feel people who are passionately open and together in it for the goodness of the cause.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the cause and what Transcendence is all about. It's more than just putting on these concerts, isn't
it? Well, it is. Well, Transcendence, I mean, the word Transcendence comes from that moment in singing or acting or dance when you feel that complete connection and you feel completely alive. And it is our intention to create moments of transcendence in people's lives, both on stage and off stage. We do a lot of service projects, and we are actually kind of born from a service element of wanting to have more of a connection than what we could get from the Broadway stage, where 1,000 people come in, 1,000 people go out, and you don't have like that interaction with them. When people come to our concerts, one of the coolest things is you get there at 5 p.m. for the pre-show picnicking, and the actors are actually there greeting you as you come in. We have our performers there pouring wine. We have them working the box office. You're meeting all these people, and you're talking with them. And then, you know, in just a couple of hours, you're actually seeing them on stage. And these are people who have some really phenomenal careers. So it's people that you're getting access to that you typically might not have that kind of a personal connection with.
Hmm. You mentioned the fantastical family night on the 25th and 26th of this month. And then for August, the big feature is the Music of the Night show. Tell us what one would see and hear on that show.
Well, I mean, that's, of course, the show is based on the song from the Phantom of the Opera, The Music of the Night. And the themes kind of interweave that idea of the magic of getting simple and the magic of listening and then kind of the colors that can come out. All of our shows, it's good to remark that they're all kind of a mix of the best of Broadway kind of songs. It's always an eclectic mix. We always throw in things that are not Broadway as well. We have phenomenal tap dancers. This show in particular is going to be really focused on music and harmony and some phenomenal songs that that can kind of stop the show.
So is there a through line other than Music of the Night, or is that what you're basing the show on, Music of the
Night?
We're
basing it on that, and it's really a journey. I mean, we like to call it a subconscious mixtape. Because it literally is this mix of all these songs. But when people come, they feel that it's so much more than a concert featuring great songs. There really is this intention of, like I was saying, like transcendence, of raising the emotional level of the community that we're working with and tying that in through all these messages that are kind of interwoven in musical theater. Which I think it was Paula Vogel. I was listening to an interview of hers, and she was saying that musical theater is one of the most powerful ways of creating social change, or of like actually, you know, you can say something, but when you do it in music, people are willing to receive it. And the fact that you can take a song and you can take a group of songs and you can transform the state of an audience, or you know, there's just this great opportunity there that we really resonate with.
That's neat. And a gala in September, which we can talk about maybe on another visit, which I'm sure is going to be a wonderful experience. You've also got Ben Vereen coming out as part of the Transcendence Artists series. How is that different from the other shows that you're doing?
Absolutely. So the Broadway Into the Stars concerts, it's cool because each one has about 20 performers in it. And they're, you know, various talents and abilities and experiences. What we did with our Transcendence Artists series, which runs in conjunction with the Broadway Into the Stars series, is we want to have more intimate concerts in intimate settings throughout wine country. This year, we have 5 different concerts. Ben Vereen is one of them, and they're all under the stars. A lot of them are at wineries. So obviously, if you go to our website, you can kind of see all the different things we're doing. But Ben Vereen is actually going to be in Jack London State Park, like our Broadway Under the Stars concerts. And it's a great way for us to bring people who are like-minded, like Ben Vereen. Last year, we had Sutton Foster as a part of our artist series. And to bring him into the park and for him to connect with our audiences and connect with our performers.
That's terrific. That's going to be on August 9th. More information at ttsonoma.org.
TTC Sonoma, yes.
TTC Sonoma.
Mm-hmm.
I also need to mention that when people are coming to this, they're really contributing to the health of the park, aren't they?
Yeah, there's actually some remarkable things to mention about the park. I mean, Jack London State Park was one of the 70 state parks that was going to close 2 years ago. And we've been able to be a remarkable way of helping to keep this park thriving and open. It's remarkable to me that, you know, this park was going to be closed, and now this year Ben Vereen is going to be there with hundreds of people coming to – that it's gone from a, as Jack London says, sleepy permanent planet to a superb alive meteor, you know, of a place that is a community center when it could be shuttered and closed.
Right. So just a modest admission price for the park multiplied thousands of times is really contributing to the financial health of and the maintenance of the park as well.
Absolutely.
And you're catching a great show while you're at it.
And the park just got named. This is remarkable too, that USA Today's 10 Best just named our venue and our concerts in the park as one of their top 10 outdoor concert venues in America that shouldn't be missed. It was the only one mentioned from California.
Oh, my
actually.
Gosh. That's amazing. So it's
some place to be. It's a good place to check out.
Hmm. TTCSonoma.org. Stephen, thanks for coming in to talk about this marvelous series. You can get more information at the website. I'm wondering if you could share with us a very special song that kind of wraps up the theme of the entire series for
Absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely. So our lead wine sponsor, we are in wine country, so there's a lot of wine that's up there. And our lead sponsor is Benziger Winery, and we have a wine with them that we have launched for the first time, our own wine called Paint the Universe, which was named after a song that was written by one of our artists, Carrie Manilakis, called Paint the Universe. It is a season theme of ours, and this is the original song called Paint the Universe that Carrie wrote and is singing.
Singing her own tune, Paint the Universe, the theme for Transcendence Theater Company's season. More information once again at TTCT.org. I'm sorry, TTCSonoma.org. Here once again to update us on some upcoming summer events at the San Francisco Literary Society and to offer us some summer beach reading is our critic at large, Peter Robinson. Hi, Peter.
Hi, David. Good to be here. And that music we're listening to is titled Whispering. And in fact, it's the background theme from a movie because we're going to be having a movie soiree at the San Francisco Literary Society. And this is one of these movies where the music tells the story as much as the actors. The story is set in 1924. It's on board a yacht. It's, in fact, Randolph Hearst's yacht, William Randolph Hearst, the movie magnate. And it raises the question, did he get away with murder? And in between, during this sort of summer, I want to say it's a British garden party, but it's at sea on board the yacht. It has a star-studded cast, Carrie Elwes, Kirsten Dunst. She plays Marion Davis, who is the mistress of William Randolph Hearst. Ezzy Lidded plays Charlie Chaplin. And Joanna Lumley is the narrator-journalist who takes us through the story. So it's a fascinating piece of both murder mystery, but also jazz history. Because in a strange sort of way, the music re-echoes what's going on board. And from the beginning, you're drawn into the egotism of Hearst. Can he stand the possibility that his mistress, Marion Davis, in real life, in this case played by Kirsten Durston, is possibly having an affair with Charlie Chaplin? And that's the setup for an extraordinary piece of filmmaking. Now, a word about the director, Peter Bogdanovich, who many people know from the picture show period of the earlier days. He has stayed very close to the costumes, the chatter, the story of the period, and at the same time, he has taken a whisper, because there was never any confirmation that Hearst, in fact, arranged the murder. And in those days, if you were a press tycoon or a press baron, the police often didn't want to ask you too many questions because they felt you had more power than they had. As a background to this story, Hearst never got convicted. There was no investigation, and all that remembers about the whole event are the whispers. And at the critical point, when they think things are getting a little too unruly, in comes the music again, and this is when the request for the Charleston is asked for. So if you're into jazz from the 1920s, if you want to hear some fun-tapping music and at the same time get intrigued by a murder mystery with a interesting cast, join us for a literary movie soiree at the San Francisco Literary Society, and the place to get tickets is 415-381-6671. The event is on July the 15th, Tuesday, in Mill Valley. And here we go. Let's hear the Charleston.
And then more with Peter Robinson on some summer reading picks. Of the Charleston for your summer afternoon. And now with some summer reading picks, here once again is Peter Robinson.
I've chosen a couple of paperbacks, easy to pack, easy to take with you, and at the end of the trip you can always leave them behind. And the first is by John le Carré. It's called A Delicate Truth. And this, again, is a good example of how a spy writer has been able to adapt to the 21st century. It's a story which is set in Gibraltar, which I think is real John le Carré territory, since Gibraltar nowadays is the last outpost of the British Empire. They still run the Union Jack up the flagpole at the evening. And it's a mix between how diplomats should not get involved with mercenaries. So without spoiling the story, the wrong person is killed, and it all reverberates back to Downing Street, back to Westminster, and suddenly the Prime Minister and the Cabinet are having to give explanations. It's a story for our time, because this use of mercenaries nowadays, as the British Secret Service, or in this country the CIA, do more outsourcing, you begin to see the consequences of not having the real pros on the job. John le Carré is very much on his own home territory. It's the grey moral world, the same world that the spy and the Who Came In From the Cold came out of. And in this case, it is a fast read. So if you're on a six-hour plane flight and you're heading east, west, north or south, this will keep you intrigued in your book. And it'll also make you look around at the airport and ask, who is that person in front of you?
John le Carré, always a good summer pick, I'm sure. What else you got?
The second is a new book. This is by Alan First. He also is a novelist, a spy writer, and it's called Midnight in Europe, an intriguing story set in 1937 as the drums of war are beginning to beat. And in this case, it's almost like a travel writer's tour of Europe. He kicks off in New York. We get some wonderful, wonderful, wonderful examples of Christmas shopping in the December. And then we cut to Paris. Then we're in Madrid. And off we go on a European tour where mystery and intrigue are constantly in the background. And I think one of the gifts that Alan First has is to make you feel that you are in those historic moments as they are happening. And I would highly recommend, again, one of two things. If you're a audiobook listener, the reader on this one, because it is available as an audiobook, manages to capture all the different accents from the French to the Spanish to the New York as the story evolves. It's a story which really is rooted in the Spanish Civil War, and by 1937, you know, Franco was already running the show, but of course the spies were on the other side. So that's my second tip, a fast read and an interesting thriller. It's called Midnight in Europe, and the writer is Alan First. And my last suggestion, this time it is in paperback, is by Anne Fowler. It's called Z, simply the letter Z, and it's the novelistic fiction version of Scott Fitzgerald's wife, Zelda. And again, this is a wonderful, wonderful period piece. If you saw the movie The Great Gatsby last year, then this kind of fills in the blank. It's the story of the Southern Belle who meets the writer, and after that her life takes on all sorts of new flamboyant happenings, a very public marriage. And although it's a novel, I think she has got so many of these things right. I think it was Fitzgerald who said, "Show me a hero and I'll write you a tragedy." This, of course, is a sad story. It's well told. The dialogue is crisp and you're back in, this time, the 1920s again. As a final fun, if you did see The Great Gatsby, you may also enjoy Tender as the Night, which, of course, was the other great Scott Fitzgerald turn up for the books.
Indeed. Well, thank you for those three picks. We'll put those up on our website, John le Carré's offerings, as well as Alan First's and Anne Fowler's. Peter, thank you for keeping our brains occupied this summer with some great reading material.
Okay, David, good to be here.
That's it for Open Air this week. Advance thanks to Kevin Vance for taking hosting duties next 2 weeks for me. And thanks, as always, to Niels Swinkels for some production assistance. I'm David Latulippe, your host for Open Air. A reminder that our programs are archived at our website, klw.org. And if you've got a suggestion for a segment for Open Air, drop me an email, david@klw.org. Thanks for listening.